is always a risk to try to do anything in the way of chemistry with you guys. The approbation and grief that comes from having done that is remarkable. But I feel obligated to share with you something that happened this week. I've tried to think about how best to get you to understand this, so I think I'm going to do it this way. Usually within the first day or two of starting a class of freshmen in chemistry, I bring their attention to the periodic chart. And when I bring their attention to the periodic chart, I try to make the point that the only elements that are really happy doing what they're already doing are the noble gases. You've heard of the noble gases. Mm-hmm. To the left of the noble gases are elements that would like to have a few more electrons. To the right, which means you actually have to go over the other end of the periodic chart and start again, are elements that have a little bit too many. They'd like to lose electrons. And that's the point I'm trying to make. Okay? And I make the point this way. I tell them that if they remember John Madden, some of you will, he was first a successful football coach in the NFL and then was a commentator on Monday Night Football. His job, the job of any commentator on a show like that, is to keep the audience watching because that delivers the audience to the advertisers and pays the bills. So there was this one Monday Night Football game that was deadly dull. And John Madden did his job by having the cameras focus not on the game. That was not worth watching. But he took them over, and this is true, he focused on a defensive tackle. Okay? Now, what does a defensive tackle look like?
Big.
Somewhere in your comment, you should use the word mountain. Huge. And he focused the camera, and he said, I want to tell you something about this guy. He wants to be a wide receiver. What does a wide receiver look like? Look like a gazelle, right? Okay, looks like a gazelle. He then focused on a wide receiver, and he says he wants to be a middle linebacker. What does a middle linebacker look like? A block of granite, right? He focused on a middle linebacker who wanted to be a quarterback. The quarterback wanted to be a this and that. He said, and here's his statement: nobody on the field is doing what they really want to do. And I thought that was one of the most profound statements I've ever used, and I used that in my class. Okay? So, Monday morning, 9 o'clock, I started my class with that story. I got to the point of saying, what does a defensive lineman look like? And two guys in the third row pointed to their right and said, they look like him. And I look, and there's this great big guy, and I sort of push it aside, and I say, I get to the point of wide receiver, what does a wide receiver look like? These two point to this one and say, look like him. And I get to the point of saying, wide receiver wants to be a middle linebacker. What does a middle linebacker look like? The two on the outside point to the guy in the middle and say, look like him. I had all three positions in my class. And my class is not one that football students normally come to. They don't usually take my class. I've got three of them. And I hit all three in the first 10 minutes that I was talking about chemistry. Now, I thought that was remarkable enough. It has nothing to do with anything else. But I felt like I had to share that with you. Looks like him. Looks like him. Looks like him. That was odd. Okay. We have made it to 1 Kings 3. We have made it to 1 Kings 3. Solomon is king. David has died and with appropriate ceremony has been married. And Solomon is now beginning his time as king. Now we looked just a little bit at the first part of this chapter as we were breaking up last week. What's the very first thing that Solomon did when he became king? Answer, we don't know, but the first one that the scripture tells us about here is he what? He married the daughter of Pharaoh. He became son-in-law to Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Why was that? Almost certainly it was because making some treaty, some non-aggression pact, or some treaty of peace between the two. And what does that imply? Did she become a good Jewish girl immediately afterwards? Not likely. And that's the beginning of something that will be pretty big later. It says in verse 2, the people were still sacrificing on the high places because at that time a dwelling place for the name of the Lord had not yet been built. Verse 3, Solomon loved the Lord, followed the precepts of his father, and then there is this bitter word. My word is except. Except that he offered sacrifice and incense on the high places, and the implication is he was worshiping false gods. He was worshiping God, but he was worshiping false gods as well. Now, I think you should say, in spite of this, comes verse 4. In verse 4, what does he do? He goes to Gibeon. That was the place. The temple had not been built yet. They had, under David, they had captured Jerusalem, and David had built a palace there, but God had told him, you're not the one going to build a temple. And so he goes back to Gibeon because that's where the worship center was. And he made sacrifices. Verse 4, how many sacrifices did he make? It says thousands, or it says 8,000, depending on your translation. And then it says in verse 5, God responded. God responded in a way that he hadn't really responded to anybody but David in decades. Maybe with Samuel way back there, God had responded some. He speaks to Solomon in what way? In what manner? In a dream. Mine said it was in a dream during the night. I have been known to fall asleep on Saturday afternoon, so I could have had a dream during the afternoon. They're specifically saying it was a dream at night. And God asks him a question. It doesn't say that Solomon woke up. It implies all of this was going on during the dream. During the vision, I think, would be a better word for us to use. What did God ask him? What did God say? Ask what you would like me to give you. What does yours say, Kitty? Ask
what I shall give you.
Shall give you. God is going to make a gift to him, and he's inviting Solomon to pick it up. Was Solomon registered at Dillard's? Was he listed someplace? I'm on Facebook primarily so that I can look a little bit at my own grandson and a lot at my nieces and nephews scattered here and there. They are cute as the dickens. They may not be cuter than yours, but they're as cute. Anyway, something popped up about one of my cousins. And what it said was, wish so-and-so a happy birthday. And then there's a little link. And I thought, well, that sounds like a nice thing to do. I like my cousin. Maybe I can wish. And I popped on it, and it says, here's what you could buy at Starbucks. It will cost you $10. Here's what you could buy at Target. It will cost you this much. My cousin somehow was either registered or Facebook had done this for her by looking at all the things she had looked at. I suspect Facebook had done this for her. I don't think of my cousin as a vain person who would do this for herself. But it was a list of all these things that I could buy to wish my cousin a happy birthday. I didn't. I decided I wouldn't wish my cousin a happy birthday, but there it sat. So he probably wasn't registered at any place. God says, what can I give you? Solomon's reply is fascinating and suggests a humility that later on seems to have dissipated a bit. Solomon had a little more humility at this moment than he seemed to show later. What's Solomon's response? Was his immediate response, oh, I'd like this?
No.
How does his response begin?
God's being faithful to David.
Read a few words and see if you can sort of summarize what he's saying. He is remembering what?
What God has done for David.
God's faithfulness to David. What else does he talk about?
He said he's only like a child. He needs help.
Yeah. He says, you've continued that faithful love to me. And now you have made me king in succession to David my father. I left out a word from my translation as I read that last little bit. Does yours have a word I left out?
Son.
Mine says this. You showed most faithful love to your servant David, my father, when he lived his life before you in faithfulness and uprightness and integrity of heart. You have continued this most faithful love to him by allowing a son of his to sit on the throne today. And now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in succession to David, my father. I think that may fit with what you have heard or will hear in the service today. And then he says, but.
Yeah.
Yours says little child.
I'm a little
child. I'm
young. Mine says young man.
Young child.
Inexperienced.
A little child.
Unskilled in leadership, mine says. What's
yours?
Yours just says inexperienced.
Right. You don't know how to carry out my duty.
I don't know how to carry out my duty.
Yeah.
Next to nothing.
Now, is he pretending to a humility he doesn't have? Or do you think Solomon is expressing what's in his heart?
I think he knows it.
I'm thinking he's expressing what's in your heart. Because he goes on to say, and here is your servant, surrounded with your people, whom you have chosen. Notice what he says so far. You've shown faithful love to David during his lifetime. You've shown faithful love to David by allowing a son of his to sit on the throne. And you've given me faithful love by letting me be the son that sits on the throne. What's the Hebrew word for faithful love? Some of you will remember. H-E-S-E-D, hesed. What's the closest word from the New Testament, from the Greek? Agape. Because remember, agape is an attitude of wanting the best for somebody else. Okay. You could have said, you have shown grace to me. That might have been pretty close to, you have shown agape grace to me, might be some way of saying this. Here is your servant, I'm now at verse 8, surrounded with your people whom you have chosen. Here is your servant, surrounded by your people whom you have chosen. A people so numerous that its number cannot be counted or reckoned. Pause for just a minute. Do you think Solomon's remembering something at this point?
David's census.
He might be remembering a census. Okay? Was that census completed?
No.
Was that census completed? Tell you what, flag that question. Hold that question for either another time during today or for another time after today. The Bible does answer it, but it doesn't answer it here. Yes, Willie.
Based on what we see in his speaking with the Lord back to when he was allowing the sacrifices and stuff like that, do you think that he fell victim to social status?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I want to remind you, you may not be seeing things in a chronological order. The people who would have been those that God used to write the Bible would not have been nearly as worried about chronology as we would coming out of the Western experience that we have come out of. In the more Eastern setting, and I'm using some very specific words that have meanings that I don't understand. If you have a Western sense, you think in terms of this and this and this happening in the sequence of some kind. In the Eastern world, it would be more, here is what meaning I want you to take, and you can see that if you see these ideas in this order, and they would have been a little less worried about chronology. So there may be a chronology here, but there may not. So this thing about the worshiping of false gods and all this kind of stuff, that's sort of going on alongside of this, but is it alongside a little later, a little ahead? That's not all that clear. But there's something in Solomon's heart that's pulling him away. There's something in Solomon's heart that's pulling him toward. There's something in Solomon's heart that says, I'm the greatest that's ever been. There's something in Solomon's heart that says, I need help. And I think if you look closely enough, you may recognize those tensions exist in every human being that's ever lived. Some human beings admit it, some don't, but the tension's there. So, back to this. I'm surrounded, here is your servant, surrounded with your people whom you have chosen. That's the way mine lays it out. Does yours lay it out? Something like that. A people so numerous that its number cannot be counted or reckoning, or at least shouldn't be. So, give your servant wisdom. That's what it says, right?
No.
Not in my translation.
Understanding.
Somehow we have gotten to this point by thinking Solomon asked for wisdom.
Yeah.
And it is true that that's what he got. But he asks for it in a somewhat more interesting way. Mine says, he give your servant a heart to understand how to govern your people. He continues, how to discern between good and evil. And then he closes with, for how otherwise could one govern such a great people as yours? God's relationship to his people is front and center, front and back, all the way through. Give your servant a heart to understand how to govern your people. Give your servant a heart to understand how to discern between good and evil. For without that, how could anyone hope to govern well a good people, a great people, such as yours? Now, does yours end those, that little section, does it use the word wisdom?
No.
I don't think I saw that in the translations I looked at, but I may not have looked at all the ones you saw. Now, if you want one word that summarizes up everything he said, wisdom's a pretty good one. So I'm not rejecting that as the word, but I am suggesting it's more subtle what he asked for. And what God gave him was a more comprehensive gift than he asked for. He asked for something specifically here, and God widened what he gave him to give him something bigger. It pleased the Lord, verse 10 said, that Solomon should have asked for this. Verse 11, and he said, since you have asked for this and not asked for long life for yourself or for riches or for the lives of your enemies. If you ask for the lives of your enemies, what exactly does that mean? You're asking for the death of your enemies, right? That's the way they're... You've not asked for long life for yourself. You haven't asked for short life for your enemies. But you have asked for a discerning judgment. That's the way my translation puts it, right there. Now, right there, do you get the word wisdom? Does he give you the word wisdom yet? Yours does. A couple of you do. A couple of you do. Some of you don't. Okay, right about there is where the word wisdom starts to show up in some translations.
Discernment to understand justice.
You have asked for a discerning judgment for yourself. A discerning to understand justice. Some of you will simply have wisdom or some variation. Does it have any modifiers with the word wisdom, those of you who have it?
It's administrating.
Acquiring the judgment. Yes. Asking for discernment so as to acquire the judgment.
Verse 12, here and now I will do what you ask. And now comes the word wisdom, full bore, powerful, up front and center. I will give you a heart as wise and shrewd as can be, as wise and shrewd in a way that no one has had before and no one will have after you. And what you have not asked, I'll give you too. Such riches and glory as no other king can match, the implication is before or after, and I will give you a long life. If. There's the first if in this whole thing. Does that word if apply all the way back to the first, or does it apply just to the long life? Starts with W. We don't know. We don't know. That's a judgment.
In my translation, there's a period. And then there's an if you walk in my ways.
And I don't. I'm not sure there's periods in the Hebrew that would have been back behind all this. In any event, I will give you long life if you follow my ways, keep my laws and commandments as your father David followed them. Whoa. Boy, there's a loophole. Did anybody see that loophole?
Yes.
How's David doing?
That's what I was thinking about.
Pretty good sometimes and not so good at other times.
It's
not you have to be perfect. You have to meet the... David set a bar of being part of God that almost nobody else set. And yet, if you go through David's life, and one of the powerful things to me about Scripture is it doesn't pull punches when David messed up. If you at least try for that wholeheartedly, then that's going to satisfy me.
And what we have to remember is Solomon was Bathsheba's son.
He was a part of that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Verse 15, four words. Then Solomon woke up.
And behold.
Yours says behold, huh? Mine says it had been a dream or a vision. He returned to Jerusalem, I'm still in verse 15, stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, presented more burnt offerings, remember he had just been presenting some, and communion sacrifices and held a banquet for all of those in his service. Okay? What did he ask for? The ability to govern. The ability to govern well. And he asked for some specific aspects in order to do that. And what did God say? God said, you have asked very well. I'll not only give you that, and better than anybody's ever had before, or ever will have after, I will also give you the things you didn't ask for. Riches, power, and long life. If you follow my ways and keep my laws and commandments as your father David followed them. The rest of chapter 3 gives you a single example of Solomon's wisdom playing out. The story should be familiar to many of you. What happens? Two women come before him for judgment, except my translation doesn't say two women. Harlots, yours says. Ladies of the evening. What's the phrase? Fallen flowers? Is that the phrase I heard one time? Prostitutes, my translation says. Well, I haven't heard that one. I wonder where you've been to pick that one up. There are four women named in Jesus' genealogy, way over in Matthew and way over in Luke. Four women are named. How many of those were prostitutes? Answer, at least one. Which one?
Rahab,
who was in Jericho. At least one. At least one. Two prostitutes came to the king and stood before him. "If it please you, my lord," one of the women said, "this woman and I live in the same house, and while she was in the house, I gave birth to a child. 3 days after my delivery, this woman also gave birth to a child. We were alone together. There was no one else in the house with us, just the two of us." Now, she has three times said something. There's two women and two babies, and that's it. Nobody else is around. "One night, this woman's son died," and my translation said she overlaid him. Any of you know what that means? They were lying on the same bed. She rolled over and smothered the kid. "In the middle of the night, she got up, took my son from beside me while your servant was asleep, took him in her arms, put her own dead son in mine. When I got up to give my child some nourishment, there he was dead. But in the morning, I looked at him carefully, and he was not the child I had born at all. Then the other woman spoke and said, 'Pack of lies, pack of lies, this is my baby.'" Well, that's a quick summary because we do want to move on. And so, the end of verse 22, they wrangled before the king. Mine says wrangled, isn't that a great word? What does yours have?
Spoke.
Spoke, that's all it says.
I like wrangled better.
I like wrangled better too. Okay. The king summarizes. This one says, "My son is the one who's alive, your son is dead." The other says, "This is not true. Your son is the dead one, mine is the live one." And what does Solomon do? You can almost put your Bibles down at this point if you haven't read this ever before. "Bring me a sword, cut the living baby in half, give half to each one, that'll satisfy them." And one of them said, "Good idea." And one of them said, "No. Let her have the baby. Keep the baby alive." And Solomon said,
That's the mother.
Verse 28, "All Israel came to hear of the judgment which the king had pronounced and held the king in awe, recognizing that he possessed divine wisdom," wisdom that was beyond what would have been his as a human being, "for dispensing justice." Okay?
Does anybody find it remarkable that Solomon is going to arbitrate over two women and a baby?
I was hoping somebody would point this up. This is coming to the king for judgment? Why?
Because it's an illustration of his wisdom and they just picked it out.
Possibly, but he's still making the judgment. How would this come to the attention of the king? Ooh.
Maybe it's visited over prostitutes.
Maybe he was visiting the prostitutes, my dear friend of the prostitutes. With the most beautiful cynical twinkle I know. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to put this one on the board. We've got some good quotes. Yes, sir.
I would think he handpicked someone because I don't think anything comes to him unless he asks for it or orders it.
Okay, that's possible. That's possible. I'm sorry. It is possible that he just happened to be doing that. It is possible that he asked for this particular one. I think it's more likely that, as should happen when our judicial system works properly, questions that cannot be adjudicated clearly at a lower level move to a higher level. And I can sense that judges lower on wringing their hands and saying, what can I do? Boy, this one I can't figure out. He said, she said, how can you ever figure this out? And I can sense something that would be of growing awareness. People would be aware that this thing was moving its way through the courts, and finally it gets to what would be the equivalent of the Supreme Court, which is Solomon. I don't know that that's so, but I think it's at least possible. Yours, I suppose, while he was visiting the prostitutes, maybe that's possible too. I think it is an example, one of many, but I do think it probably had some notoriety for the people that those who read this, who had lived through this, would have said, oh yeah, I remember that case.
Well, and then, I mean, it says verse 1, or the next after that, they feared the king, for his judgment was, you know, the wisdom of God.
Okay. I would like to ask you for a moment to find, I believe it is chapter 4, verse 26. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that that's so, because my translation sometimes gets verse numbers all mixed up. We're just now in chapter 3, right, of 1 Kings. I want you to go to chapter 4 of 1 Kings, and I want you to find verse 26. Does it say Judah and Israel were numerous or something like that?
25.
Verse 25 says that? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, then verse 25 is what I want. Will you read that verse? My translation, if we found the right verse, says, Judah and Israel were numerous as the sand on the seashore. They ate and they drank and they were happy. Is that verse 25? It should be close. Is it 20? Okay, 20 is one of the possibilities that I have down here. Is it verse 20?
Yes.
Is it verse 20?
Yes.
Okay. So, Solomon's world is at peace. Solomon is leading all this, and here it was. Now, everything else around you in chapter 4 sort of comes to and goes out of that verse. And the first little bit of chapter 5 flows from this. That's sort of the pivot verse of chapter 4. And since I don't want to spend much time on chapter 4, let me simply summarize quickly. You get a list, verses 1 through 6, of who the chief officials were. I want to bring your attention specifically to the end of verse 5. Starting at verse 2, what are the titles that you see? Verse 2, there's a person named?
Priest.
His function is priest. What's the next function? This verse to verse 3. Secretaries?
Recorder.
Mine says herald, yours says recorder. I have in parentheses Benny, again, those of you who were here, commander of the army, and it names the two people who had been priests. But notice back up in verse 2, it was the son of one of those two who was priest. You remember the other priest had been put in internal exile. Remember, there's some things that we saw at the end of 2 Samuel. Okay, come down to verse 5. The first title is?
Priest and advisor.
Mine says chief administrator.
District governor.
Oh, district governor, as you're saying. I'm about the first half of verse 5. How about the second half of verse 5?
Friend.
Mine says friend of the king, and friend is capitalized. Yours says advisor, and I do not believe that brings out what needs to be brought out. Yours says the king's friend. Okay? The king's friend. Wouldn't it be cool if there were a civil service position that was friend of the president? The president actually had a friend, and you know, have somebody hold that office. Seems like sometimes that's not the case. He goes on to master of the palace. Mine says in start of verse 6, commander of the army. Now remember, Benny had been named earlier, but I think that was an older piece. This is the guy who's now, and notice who it is. Who's the commander of the army down in middle of verse 6? Yes, yes, yes. But say some more.
Son of.
No, I think you're at the end of verse 6. I want the middle of verse 6. Mine says the commander of the army there. Does yours say that? I've got three names. Ahishar, who is master of the palace, followed by Eliab, E-L-I-A-B. Mine says that guy who is the son of Joab is king, is commander of the army. I found that fascinating. And then Adoram, who's in charge of the forced labor. Whoa, forced labor. That's a very kind and gentle word for something harsh and brutal. What's the harsh and brutal word? Slave labor. Solomon had slave labor? You bet he did. Tons of it. That's going to factor in later. Chapter 4, verse 7. Solomon had 12 administrators who saw to the provisioning of the king and his household. Each one had to provide for 1 month in the year. And then it begins to name who those are and where they are, and it spreads around all over the place. And it comes around to so that everybody has to raise 1 month's worth of stuff for the king. What would that stuff have been? The best of food, the best of horses, the best of craftsmen, the best of wood products and of the wood to make those products out of. And you hear this echo from way back in Moses, who said, if you ever decide to get a king, that king is going to eat you out of house and home. And Samuel said the same thing. You don't want a king, because if you get a king, they're going to just take the best. They're going to take the best of your daughters to be his wives. They're going to take the best of your sons to be in his armies. They're going to take the best of your crops, the best of your flocks, herds. Here it's happening. Each group gets 1 month a year. They have to supply all these things.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
To me, this brings in a good sense of direction as far as in the Catholic world, with the popes, before the popes have been grand and glorious, and this new one seems to be more in line with being served.
Do you know the training, educationally, that this particular pope got? Do you know his professional, his educational training? He was a chemist. Part of me wants to say, what else do you expect? But I think that's a little bit false. Yeah, I think there is a humility being shown there that is refreshing. I have a few more verses that may be anywhere between verse 25 and verse 27 and maybe as far back as verse 22 that talks about what they provided to Solomon. Does yours have that somewhere?
Yeah.
What happens is my translation has decided I want to reorder the verses so they make a little more sense. Mm-hmm. And then I have some clues out in the margin that they reordered them, but I can't figure out where necessarily everything is. Okay. Somewhere in chapter 5, it's either verse 9 or it's verse 29. I don't really know which. Is a phrase that says, God gave Solomon immense wisdom and understanding. That's 29? Okay. Is that still chapter 4, verse 29?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sorry about this, but I like to have a different translation than here. God gave Solomon immense wisdom and understanding. Suggesting wisdom and understanding might not be quite the same thing, and the two words are trying to convey some kind of information a little wider than either one alone. And a heart as vast as the sand on the seashore. The wisdom of Solomon surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than anyone. So this would be Persia, that would probably be the East. Egypt would be to the south and west. Wiser than, and it names some specific people. His fame spread to the surrounding nations. He composed Proverbs. How many?
3,000.
3,000, it says. The songs that he wrote numbered how many? 1,005. He could discourse on plants from the cedars in Lebanon to the hyssop growing on the wall, and he could discourse on animals and birds and reptiles and fish. Men from all nations came to hear Solomon's wisdom, and when they came, they brought with gifts from all the kings in the world. If the kings themselves didn't come, they would send emissaries. Now, in my translation, this is chapter 5, verse 1, and yours, I think, it says, Hiram, the king of Tyre, sent an embassy to Solomon, having learned that he had been anointed. And if you keep reading, what you find is what Hiram has sent is goods and material and trained people to begin the process of building the temple. So we've reached the point where Solomon is about to build the temple. Are we in agreement that that's where we are?
Yes.
Okay? Then I want to stop there. And here's your assignment for next week. I want you to read all of 1 Chronicles. Because if you read 1 Chronicles, what you find is the first verse of 2 Chronicles starts at this place. So this is a time for us to go and just walk through 1 Chronicles, make sure we see what's there, see what lines up with what we've done so far. So we've had 1 and 2 Samuel more or less laying over 1 Chronicles, and that says that 1 and 2 Kings are going to overlay with 2 Chronicles. So next week we're going to take a quick look at Chronicles. Okay? One of the questions I'd like you to ask is, how many people should there be in the choir at a worship service? It's answered in there somewhere, or at least it's suggested. Okay? If you think you know the answer, go look it up. You can see what you think. 1 Chronicles. 1 and 2 Samuel plus a little bit of 1 Kings overlays 1 Chronicles. And so I want us to go and pick that up next week so that we can put this into context, because I don't want to turn around a month or two from now and come back and circle back to this. Okay? 2 Chronicles more or less overlaps 1 and 2 Kings. So I want us to take a good look at that. That's a question you can look at. Let me see if you can pick up a couple more. Come on. I'm not finding it. Yeah, there's. I want you to notice a comment about Issachar, but I'm not spotting my notes in here yet. Okay. I want you to note, as you get late in 1 Chronicles, I want you to see if you can find out if David did anything specific to prepare for the building of the temple. And I'm hoping, if you've not read this recently, you will be surprised at how much he did. But I want you to see that, because that's laid out. And we're going to review all of that next time we're together, which I hope will be next week. And then we will come back to this point, which I think is the middle of verse, the most of, or the middle of, chapter 5 of 1 Kings. And from there we'll begin our trek again. Okay? What did Solomon ask for? When God says, ask what you want of me, what did he ask for? Something that would help him do the service he needed to others. Notice he refers to himself as servant. Notice he refers to himself as inadequate for the task in front of him. Notice he sees himself as not necessarily going to do very well at anything he tries to do if he does not have God's help. And what he wants God's help to do is the wisdom and the understanding and the skill to do what God has called him to do. Of all the places in this part of the Bible, I don't think there's a higher spot. And I think there's a signal here that God will do that for anybody. The prayer of a fervent heart that recognizes I have an important task to do that benefits the people that God has called, and I can't do it without God's help, so God, will you help me? It is my belief God honors that prayer ahead of almost any other prayer I know of. And so I urge you today, ponder that, and maybe let that affect the way you pray. Let's have a word of prayer as we finish today. Our Father, you have called each of us and more besides. There is a good place here where we have gathered. There's room for more. We pray that you would help us recognize that we are inadequate to what you called us to do, but that if you work with us and that we allow you to work through us, things can be accomplished that are almost unbelievable. And so today we pray for your Spirit to fill us, for your Spirit to guide us, for your Spirit to smooth the path, and to help us see that path as we need to see it, so that we can be here in this place the people that you've called us to be, and that through us people may see you clearly. For we ask this in your Son's name. Amen.